Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 39 of NML Crossing, where it's an odd day here for me. It's probably going to be a shorter episode because, to be completely honest, I'm struggling to fit this one in today. It's going on, almost 24 hours since we've had plumbing in the house. So there's been a lot of weird upheaval to deal with here. Yesterday, when I wrapped up and uploaded episode 38, I went and, cooked dinner and did some laundry, and as I'm walking through the master bathroom, I hear bubbling, like a bloop, bloop, bloop. I'm like, that's not good. And so I go into the commode, and there's bubbles, just bubbles there, and like an idiot, I flushed, just thinking maybe that'll solve it. No, it did not. Quite the opposite, in fact. And then everything started backing up into showers, and it was just, wasn't a good night. Our home warranty people couldn't help us till the next day, and yeah, so, I'm a little cranky today. I'm a little tired, but we've still got a duty, right? We're still going to get these episodes in here. Didn't want to miss a show. This is just probably going to be a much quicker one than usual, and I apologize for that. But we play the hand we're dealt sometimes, and sometimes you're not dealt enough cards, and sometimes you're dealt so many that it really ruins your day. But with that out of the way here, how about we get into it? We're still on the road to no man's land, of course, and thankfully we're still in Shadow of the Bat. Today is Shadow of the Bat number 81, which had a January 1999 cover date. The story's called Waxman and the Clown Part 2, written by Alan Grant in his penultimate issue. Pencils, Mark Buckingham, and he might be in his penultimate issue as well. Inks, Robert Campanella. Colors, Pam Rambo and Digital Chameleon. Letters, Bill Oakley. Edits, Gorfinkel O'Neill. Cover price, $1.99. Now, this one stood out to me from the get-go because it has a very, very striking cover. It's another one of the Orbic painted ones here. But it's like a real close-up shot on the Joker's face. And he's not totally Cesar Romero-ish, but he's not totally not Cesar Romero-ish on the cover. It's a striking cover. It's really, really good stuff. Just shows the bedlam going on at the asylum. You got a couple of the other Rogues Gallery members there tormenting orderlies and medics and stuff. It's one that if you saw it on the rack, it would definitely jump off at you. Now, as we get into the book here, we pick up pretty much right where we left off. We got the Joker in Jeremiah Arkham's office attempting to persuade him into turning Arkham Asylum into a Roman Colosseum of sorts, with the idea being to pretty much just let the inmates fight to the death. Just fight here. Joker doesn't say to the death. That's yet to be revealed, but it will be. Now, Joker blows up a paper bag and pops it to illustrate the current pressure status of the asylum. Now, not only do we have just the general post-quake landscape, but we also have this bubbling tension between the two giants of the place, Killer Croc and Pinhead. Now, this has really brought the place to its current pressurized state, and, something's got to give. And gladiatorial combat in the Joker's mind ought to set things right for at least a little bit. Now, he sells it not only as a let-up, but one that Jerry and his staff could actually oversee and supervise, which in turn would also help to reestablish Arkham's authority over the inmates. Now, Jeremiah kind of digs the idea. He's always been a little bit off-center, right? But he stops, considers it, and he's like, you might have a point. And so Joker leaves the office with a laugh, and also with Arkham's journal, which he starts writing in. And so a lot of our narration for the next bit's going to be Joker's entries into the diary. From here, we jump ahead to the next morning, where Orderly Dave reveals that only 8 staffers reported to work today. Now, since they're so understaffed, Arkham turns over medication dealing to a pair of security guards. Now, they've never done it before, and they express a bit of trepidation about trying, but Jerry says it ain't no thing. You see, all they gotta do is deal out the amount prescribed on the computer. Which, well, we know the Joker kind of muddled with that last time out. Now, we follow the guards, who are kind of incredulous at the dosages that they're seeing on the screen, but they deal the drugs all the same. Now, it's worth noting, Killer Croc has now been prescribed stimulants. And a lot of them. The Joker, he doesn't get anything. He gets a day off from his daily dose, while our old friend the Quake Master is giving a heaping helping of laxatives. We jump back to Jeremiah and Dave, and they wonder how the Joker got out of his cell and into Jerry's office. They head into a gymnasium where the combat will eventually be taking place, and they see the dead body of an Arkham staffer. It's a guy named John Prescott, and he's been off the grid for like a week now. And since we are in these weird times, Arkham just assumed he was one of the many people who decided to flee Gotham City. But nope. He was here, he reported to work, and he was killed. And his keys were swiped. Dave asks if this whole moratory thing is a good idea, and Jeremiah concedes that it's probably not. But at this point, it's really their only option. They either pit the inmates against each other, or they wait for them to team up and turn on them. Next thing we know, it's just about fight time, and our Arkham inmates start filing into the gym. Now, we see a few pages from the Joker's journal where he compares his latest antics to placing landmines on a dance floor. Now, Killer Croc's here, and it's worth noting he is absolutely raring to go. His blood is pumping with stimulants. Now, Jeremiah can immediately see that, you know, Croc's a little bit more amped up than usual. And so he gets in between Croc and Pinhead, and he's starting to have second thoughts. He kind of hems and haws about letting this fight go down at all. He's starting to maybe realize that he's being taken advantage of here and that, this can't end well, right? He also reveals here that he had just discovered Prescott's body, but he gets tossed to the side so the punching can commence. And from here, we get about four pages of beast-on-beast action. Now, the inmates, they all seem to be enjoying the show, except for the Quake Master, who really needs to use a bathroom. And with my current plumbing state, I guess I can sympathize. Now, the fight rages until Croc grabs a hold of a dumbbell and proceeds to bash Pinhead's tiny dome until it's mush. He then hurls Pinhead's corpse, because he is dead, at Arkham and his few remaining staffers. Now, this causes the sole-armed guard there to drop his taser. Two-Face picks it up, and now the inmates are truly running the asylum. And man, I hoped I'd be able to sidestep that line. I guess not. Now they decide to torture Jeremiah until the Joker stops them with a handy fire hose. Are there usually fire hoses in gyms? I don't know. And what's more, are they always at full pressure even after a massive earthquake screwed up all the piping throughout the city? Anyway, this leads to the Arkham guard getting his taser back. And then after spraying everybody down, the Joker turns his attention to his new friend, the Waxman, who, for having his name in the title of this story arc, is kind of a non-entity, isn't he? Anyway, the Joker jams the hose into Waxman's mouth and cranks it until old Waxy pops. Well, it was nice knowing him. Jerry demands the Joker shut off the hose, and, well, he does, without incident. Jeremiah asks why the Joker did this, to which our baddie asks, why not? But he's lying. You see, he just wants to speed up Arkham's decay and death. And, you know, he also wants to be there when it all goes down. The Arkham staffers escape the gym and they lock the inmates inside. Joker returns Arkham's diary as the doors swing shut. He, like, just chucks it out the door. And it's a pretty hopeless scene we're about to enter for the staffers. You know, they know it won't be long before the inmates bust out again. And next time, they're likely not to stop at just causing mischief. Now, some of the guards reveal that they're done. They're out of here. They haven't been paid in a month, and, this really just ain't worth it. Arkham promises to double their salaries, but, well, we kind of don't have any money, so it's an empty deal. Now, this leaves only Dave and Jeremiah as the lone staffers. Dave promises to remain at Jerry's side until the end. They then go on their rounds, where the Joker's messing around with the meds is made very, very apparent to them. They find an unnamed inmate in his cell having hung himself, and I'm not sure if this is supposed to be anybody in particular. They next find Solly Bean eating one of the orderlies. Though in fairness to Solly, he's very apologetic. He's like, I'm sorry. I have this thing inside me. I'm really sorry. We jump ahead to Arkham's office, where he and Dave are watching GNN. The reporter discusses Bruce Wayne's impassioned plea on Capitol Hill about funding the Gotham rebuild, which, spoiler alert, doesn't work. They then send it over to Nick Scratch. Nick Scratch gives us a pretty blunt, sucks to be Gotham sort of statement. Jeremiah says to himself that the United States government is going to pull the plug on the entire city. Dave says, it ain't over till it's over, and then leaves Jeremiah so he can catch some Z's. Later that evening, we join Batman as he enters the gymnasium of Arkham Asylum. Huh. It's empty, so obviously the inmates all got out. We next follow him into Solly Bean's cell, where he gives him a message he'd like to have delivered to the rest of the rogues. He wants them all to know that he will take every last one of them down. Unfortunately for him, well, they're all here. They're right there, right behind him. Joker welcomes his arch enemy to hell, and that's where we leave it. Next time out, Alan Grant's Shadow of the Bat swan song in Shadow 82. Now, before we get to our thoughts here, we do have some letters page action here in Shadow Lines. We're going to start with Brian from the, or I'm sorry, on the net. Brian on the net. He loved the Tales of Madness one-shot and Shadow of the Bat number 75. And he asks if Alan has written anything else like Tales of Madness that he could check out. Alan replies, saying that he's written an Arkham Asylum origin story that'll be appearing in an upcoming Batman Villains Secret Files and Origins special, which I think I've got kicking around here somewhere. I just never read it. Next up, we got Neil in Minneapolis, who really enjoyed the Walter story in Shadow of the Bat 75. And he says that this issue, along with Batman Chronicles number 12, were both a great look at how the quake affected ordinary Gotham citizens. He also points out an error, where Batman thanks Walter for warning him about Mr. Freeze, which, honestly, I can't remember if I pointed this out during the episode, but this happened. Batman does thank Walter for the warning, but Walter didn't give any such warning. Now, Alan replies, saying that the warning disappeared due to an editorial glitch. Wow, could you even begin to imagine a current year book actually attributing an error to an editor? I mean, our vaunted comics journalists would be tripping over themselves to try to find someone to cancel for even making any such claim. Next up, we got Andy in the UK, and he says Cataclysm needs to have far-reaching consequences. He compares it to the Invasion storyline from whenever that was, late 80s, early 90s. He actually says the following, quote, Gotham should become a virtual no-man's land of total lawlessness after an event like this. He doesn't want an easy cop-out fix for Gotham City, like what happened in the Superman books at the end of the fall of Metropolis. And, you know, this is something that I've been reading about a lot on Usenet lately. Folks on Usenet were really, really worried about this as well. Now, the gimmick with Metropolis had to do with Zatanna magicking the city back to its former glory, which, from all reports, seemed to have gone over with the fandom like a lead balloon. And, when the earthquake hit and Usenet started chatting it up, a lot of people were talking about, like, oh, I wonder if they're going to bring Zatanna in to like, wiggle her nose and make everything okay again. And thankfully, that will not be the case. Alan Grant replies here. He gives Andy points for being psychic, not only describing Gotham's fate, but also nailing it with the name of the story as well. Next up, we got Jay Caleb in Pennsylvania. And, well, he talks a lot about Alan Grant's Batman the Abduction special, which we didn't cover, and I've never read, so we'll just move on. We're going to wrap up with Jason on westlcom.com. And he says, after reading the Anarchy miniseries, he suggests that Alan Grant is an objectivist, or at the very least, a fan of Ayn Rand. You know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like any time a comics enthusiast brings up Rand, they feel like their IQ jumps like a dozen points. Like, I mean, you can't talk about Ditko without it coming up. It's the weirdest sort of low-hanging fruit. Because, I mean, you have to know some stuff to make the comment, but at the same time, it's just like, it becomes parroting after a little while. Now, Jason, he's not criticizing Grant. He's happy to see these bits and pieces were added to the story, and they weren't done in a, quote, preachy way. He then calls out current year writers, back in 1998, for being so preachy that he's had to stop following some books. Wow, Jason, you still reading comics today, pal? Probably not. Now, Alan doesn't confirm nor deny his stance, which is usually how he conducts himself, but he says that he hopes people are listening. And that's the letters page, and it might actually be Alan Grant's final time answering letters, because next issue doesn't have a letters page. So this might be goodbye to Alan Grant replying to messages, which is unfortunate, because I think I mentioned a few times that I've really enjoyed reading... I've enjoyed Alan Grant overall, but I've really enjoyed reading his letter replies. They just seem... You know, I compared it to the Morrison letter pages from Doom Patrol and the Invisibles, where, like, I buy back issues of Invisibles, not for the story, because I don't like the story very much, but I grab them because I love the back matter. You know, it's just such a weird time in comics history where, like, the internet was starting to be a thing, but it wasn't all the way there yet. Still had letters pages, but it was like, I don't know, it felt different from the letters pages from the 80s and the early 90s. Just had a different feel to them. It felt a lot more personal, and I dug that. And the Shadow of the Bat letters pages very much feel the same way. And I'm going to miss them, for sure. But with the letters out of the way, how about we talk up this issue a little bit here. I'm still really enjoying this arc. I think, like, the only... I can't even say that I have an issue with it, but, like, the only thing I question is, like, how it got its name. You know, Waxman and a Clown. The Waxman doesn't really do a whole hell of a lot, did he? He stole the Joker's seat, and then he got a hose shoved in his mouth until he popped. I did do some checking online to see if, like, Waxman and the Clown was, like, a literary reference that I just didn't get. And it might be, but I didn't find anything. I don't know if there's something else out there that might... kind of feel like Waxman and the Clown, but if you know, let me know. I really liked how everything came together here, you know, from last issue where the Joker messed around with the dosages, actually seeing it play out here, and also managing to convince Jeremiah to hold gladiatorial combat. It's insane. It's absolutely insane, but the way that it was presented here, you have a man at his wit's end in Jeremiah Arkham, who's just looking for any sort of let up, right? And here's the Joker talking, like, oddly rational, you know, with, like, planning and not just mania. And he actually sells this bill of goods to Arkham, and it's really cool. It's really cool. Gotta say, I was surprised that they killed a couple of characters here. That was pretty shocking, to the point where I actually had to flip back to the pages of the deaths here, because instinctively I thought they were just knocked out or, you know, knocked unconscious or whatever, but no, they were killed. Pinhead had his head and face turned into mushy paste, and like I said, Waxman got filled with water till he popped. Pretty interesting. And I also got to mention the cliffhanger we get here, because this cliffhanger takes me back to one of my earliest Batman cliffhangers ever. You know, Shadow of the Bat number one was the first Batman comic that I bought. With, you know, I don't even think I had any, you know, that just laying around the house. You know, like in the 80s and 90s, you just had comics laying around the house. You don't know how you got them. They just wound up there. Maybe your dad picked them up, maybe your mom picked them up, maybe a relative dropped them off or something. You just have them. Now, I had that growing up, but they were all Marvel books, so I didn't have any Batman, any Superman, anything, you know, other than like Spider-Man and Star Wars were mostly the books that were just lingering around my house willy-nilly. But the first Batman book I ever bought was Shadow of the Bat number one, and that was largely because speculation, probably. It's like, oh, you know, it's polybagged, it's a number one, it's a big deal, the movie's out, it's, you know, pretty big deal. And I read it and I was hooked. I was hooked for the entire Last Arkham arc. And the end of Shadow of the Bat number 3, where Batman was cornered by pretty much everybody. Like, everybody in Arkham had Batman cornered there. And I kind of got that vibe here with our cliffhanger today. And knowing that it is, you know, the penultimate issue of an arc and the penultimate issue of a run, I don't know, that kind of tickled me. You know, it brought me back to, like, not being able to wait for the next issue. And I mean, I have read the next issue. You know, I have read a little bit ahead. But yeah, it's been a minute since I've had that sort of urge to, like, okay, I gotta read the next one. And it took me back to being, you know, a 12-year-old kid reading his first Batman stories. So I have no idea if that was intentional to call back to Grant's first arc here, or if it's just happenstance, or maybe I'm just a little too sensitive to symbolism and themes. I don't know. But really, really good issue. Really, really good arc. Definitely feels like a value-added bit on the road to No Man's Land, and I would definitely recommend it. But I think that's about all I got to say for today, and since I am running around like a chicken with its head cut off right now, I will spare you all the NML bag for today. We will get back into that hopefully next episode, depending on if I have running water or not, I guess. We will, well, we have running water, I just can't run it because everything's clogged. So if I run it, it just fills the sink. So, I suppose it could be worse. But, it's been a rough day. Anyway, despite the fact that there is no mailbag today, I'd still like to invite anybody to join in on the conversation if you would like to. You could reach me all those different ways. Chris is on infiniteearths.com, weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com, all the socials. I'm not too hard to find. But with all that said, I probably ought to leave the fantasy world of Batman comics and re-enter the real world of clogged drains and tears. But first, I would like to thank you all so much for choosing to spend some of your day with me today. And of course, till next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting